Hi. Thank you for joining us at U Inc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you will put in the inbox of your desk until you're ready to get to work on it. This week's tool is writing, and why it is important to practice doing it, for managing to write regularly can help you communicate your ideas and gain partnerships, and how this can be a great contributor to your brand.
I write the songs that make the whole world sing. I write the songs of love and special things. I write the songs that make the young girls cry. I write the songs, I write the songs.
Okay. So let's start with what we mean by writing. Writing can mean blogging, journaling, keeping a diary, poetry, writing fiction, short stories, children's books, love letters, apology letters, emails, memos, text messages, Facebook posts, letters to the editor, requests of your representatives, or just keeping a honey-do list around. As you can see, writing is a ubiquitous element in our daily lives. Having the ability to harness this tool is important in day-to-day communications, but also for important documents. And finally, your writing can be as powerful as saving lives and inspiring others towards bravery and giving comfort and escape to many more. So clearly a tool we want to get a handle on. Virginia Woolf herself, by all accounts, an exceptionally skilled writer, would keep a diary to record her thoughts about books she was writing, and she would discuss day-to-day problems of plot or form, of character or exposition, as she conceives of them and writes or revises them. And you can read about this in the book, A Writer's Diary by Virginia Woolf, and you can find all the books and the articles mentioned in our program on our webpage at wcbe.org, as well as our podcast. And you can also find us on iTunes and SoundCloud as well. Being able to write can also make or break whether you get hired or whether you finish your college courses. If you want to get a master's, you'll have to write a master's thesis. If you want to get that promotion, you will need to be able to communicate effectively with your coworkers, subordinates, and supervisors. You do not need to have an innate ability to write. The fallacy is that you are born with this talent. Not so. In the book, On Being a Writer, by Ann Croker and Charity Craig, they ask the question, is your writing life all it can be? In this book, they act as your personal coach to explore the writing life you already have and the writing life that you wish for and how to close the gap between the two. There are 12 habits of a writer. Identify that you are a writer, and we all are. Arrange your life so you can make the time and space to be a writer. Surround yourself with people, activities, and books that will influence your writing. Notice and attend to what is going on around you. Write, in other words, sit down, put those words on paper. Send out for publishing what you write. Promote to others that you are indeed a writer. Discover that when you write, you find yourself. Engage with other writers and artists and those who support your writing. Plan your next steps and be sure to take breaks from writing in order to rest and limit yourself a little bit by leaving out some of the things, as writing is cathartic and some things are better left unsaid. And like any muscle, just learning about writing in theory is not enough. Like learning about exercise physiology is not enough. You need to actually execute those moves, do those squats and lunges. So for writing, you need to exercise this muscle by writing. And don't take my word for it. In the book, On Being a Writer by Bill Strickland, you can read all about the trials and tribulations of some of the best authors, writers, and poets of our time. This collection of 31 interviews, spanning from 1958 through 1989, explores the professional whys and wherefores of writers from William Faulkner to Ellen Goodman, and you will find rewarding insights into the characters of Hemingway, Steinbeck, Capote, Vonnegut, and other novelists, playwrights, poets, and prize-winning columnists. All writers report that an aspiring writer must work hard, produce, and some even give advice to novice writers, and others share their own struggles to write. An article that just came out last week in Entrepreneur even shares neuroscience as to why writing is a brain hack. The simple act of writing down your goals, for example, stimulates your RAS, or more commonly known as the reticular activation system, which filters out things that are not in pursuit of this goal, and so your subconscious will be on top of these goals. And the payoff is a nice dopamine load when you succeed, and this continues to reinforce your successes. And according to Lifehack, writing has so many more benefits. It helps develop your analytical skills. You get to find yourself without traveling to Bora Bora. It quiets all the other noise in your head. It sweeps your mind to retrieve the things that are important to you that you may have overlooked, puts the stress in your mind onto paper, and who knows? People are always looking for guest bloggers and contributors. Perhaps you can make a little bit of money, cha-ching, and make it rain. Keep writing because you have something to say. You're a writer, and that's something better than being a millionaire. And that is a quote from Harlan Ellison, who's an exceptionally eloquent champion of writers and a prolific American writer himself. I'm giving you a long look. Every day I write the book. On You Inc., we have a man who is easily recognizable by his handlebar mustache and, for lack of a better word, hipster beard, and is even more known for his series of crime cats, now in its fourth effort, having successfully published three previously and an activity book. Wolfgang lives in the historic Clintonville area and writes about the cats that are in his neighborhood, but is also a historian of sorts of that neighborhood as well. He has also done something transformative for human and feline earthlings alike. He has partnered with a no-kill shelter for cats, Cat Welfare, and created a reading program for kids to read to shy cats called the Crime Cats Mystery Club. He is the frontman for a band named Weehaven Laughing Academy, an alternative rock band, and an eponymously named band before that that birthed the punk swing genre of sound. He also has the Crime Cats Relief Fund, which is a private charity that issues grants to help with the medical expenses of South Clintonville's community cats. He is a retired photographer, but he is now in the studio today, and we're taking pictures. Today, here we have Wolfgang Parker. Welcome to
you. Hi, Aria. Thank you.
Okay, Wolfgang, the biggest question I want to ask you: when are you going to write about my feline force of five cats?
The cat thing, I do, by the way. All the cats in the books are neighborhood cats.
Right.
I have to get signed releases from all the families. I really like, I feel a need to like add cats.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a definite possibility. But it's one that as I write those books, they get more and more complicated because they are progressive. I don't want any kind of stasis, and I don't want them to become predictable or formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
So they become more and more difficult with the different types of history that I add, you know, that I base the story on.
Right. So, and then for those of you who don't know, Wolfgang and I live on the same street. So I know he's seen my cats, and you saw our feline force, Scarecrow.
I did. I posted it on Facebook. I love it.
Nice. Okay. So I want to start with this lovely program that you're doing, this Crime Cats Mystery Club that you launched, in order for kids to gain confidence in reading by having an absolutely non-judgmental audience of cats, not to mention loving and appreciative. And they listen to the kids read out loud. Mm-hmm. And not only, of course, is it a great practice and confidence booster for the kids, but surely the cats in the shy room of Cat Welfare, who are not oft visited, also enjoy their company. So one thing that I've read is that you actually curate the books that mm-hmm. the kids read.
Yeah.
What are you looking for in the writing style of the author or the content of the words that you choose for these books?
I tend to gravitate toward authors who, like myself, don't, I guess, underhand pitch to kids. That's kind of a difficult thing because at the age range that the Crime Cats Mystery Club caters to, we're talking like ages like 7 to like 12. And reading comprehension and mastery is all over the place. For instance, when I was in that age range, I was still having trouble like later in my years with like Captain America comics.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like my girlfriend, she was reading Ira Levin novels in fifth grade. But I wasn't a reader until I was like 24 years old.
Uh-huh.
No joke.
Okay.
And so one, if there are parents out there listening and their kids aren't readers now, there's always hope.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a writer now. I'm fairly certain if any of my English teachers are still alive, they would be flabbergasted that I became a writer.
Okay.
I was a terrible student.
Okay. It gives me hope for my son. Right. So thank you for sharing that with me.
I relate when parents say, like, my son's not a reader. And I'm like, well, you know, neither was I.
Right. He's a reader but not a writer. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's well, when I have parents mm-hmm. who look at my books when I'm out promoting Crime Cats, they'll often ask me, you know, they'll leaf through the book and they start looking at it. And if they find any larger words, they start getting wary.
Mm-hmm.
And I make sure to let them know, like I give reference for those words, and I'm trying to teach kids words. And even me, when I was a kid, I was, you know, very close to illiterate. And I always wanted to know, I always wanted to learn new words.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've heard authors from different sides of the aisle on this thing. And it seems like the authors who are more revered are the ones who say, I don't edit myself. You know, I will use a larger word to make sure that mm-hmm. there's reference in it.
Mm-hmm.
But kids want to learn. And this is part of not just entertaining children through literature. It's about developing their vocabulary. And their mastery of the English language.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things that I try and do. So I often look for writers who are doing the same type of thing. And that library that I build is, I think, 150 books. And those consist of, like, mysteries, scary stories, and cat stories.
Mm-hmm. So the cats in the room of the shelter have seen a 30% increase in their adoption rate. I think I read that somewhere.
400.
Wow, really?
400%, yeah.
So would you say that this is evidence of the power of words?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing for me with the Crime Cat and Mystery Club is it's an extension of what I try to do with my stories. And one of the main things that I try to instill in children with my own writing is a sense of empathy and the value of empathy. And so for me, when children go in there and they read, they're not only, you know, benefiting from just from their verbal communication as they read being interpreted as positive verbal communication with the cat, but they bond with the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really, really important part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
I look around in the world and I see a glaring lack of empathy.
Yep.
Most of the problems that we see on a large scale usually comes down to a lack of empathy mm-hmm. and understanding.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. Oh. Yep. So kind of along those lines, so the other gift, you know, of writing is, you know, reading. So you recently went through a dark period of your life, which you're kind of open about.
Still in it.
Okay. So, yeah, still in it.
In the depths. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So so you're not in recovery yet.
Oh, I'm in recovery.
Okay. Would you say that writing of others have helped you and how words have been of assistance to you?
As far as writing, yeah. I don't want to necessarily go into specifics
sure.
about what I'm in recovery for,
mm-hmm.
But it's something – I can't say it's something that's affected my life, my entire life. For me, there's certainly been writers – whom I unfortunately can't name because that'll give away a lot of it.
Okay.
Who really have gone through like addiction and things themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, honestly, one of the biggest things that for anyone that has been in recovery for addiction, for really anything.
Sure.
In support groups, just hearing someone share their experience and being able to glean from that some sort of insight that you would have never found on your own is a huge thing. And really just knowing that you're not alone.
Right.
So through writing, I find that. And actually through today, funny enough, this morning I wanted to quit. I had hit kind of a block. And it was someone in my group that ended up reaching out to me and talking to me. And it just so happens that he as well is a writer
mm-hmm.
and is dealing with the exact same thing. He's further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, those moments were that moment in particular where he reached out to me made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It really was the difference between my recovery just kind of screeching to a halt and me abandoning it and me, you know, honestly being here today. Not just in writing,
right.
but verbal communication in general
yep.
is really the thing. And that's been something that's really lacked, I think has been lacking in my life growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's why I became an artist. I don't think it had much to do with my natural talent or some sort of inclination from what I've read with what I've been dealing with. Because there isn't a lot of communication, emotional communication in the house. What ends up happening is children oftentimes turn to artistic expression mm-hmm. as a lifeline to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what helped kids like me deal with the world. And it wasn't to make it less alienating and less scary. And so for me, Crime Cats is a great example of that because
mm-hmm.
we live in a very turbulent, time in America.
Sure.
It's very exciting, let's say.
And hey, that's a great way to
it's
look
a page
at
turner.
Optimism, a page turner.
Right, it's a page turner.
I love that.
But for me, I feel really fortunate, and I'm dealing with like really bad stuff at the same time the page turner's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of the page turning.
Right.
Apparently, I'm a tiny little subplot. But while all that's going on, I have the benefit of having this, and these books are different than any other artistic endeavor that I've ever had because I'm able to pour the very best of myself into these books. And that's important to me because as I go through my recovery, one of the things that I have to fight every single day is low self-worth, and my self-image is terrible and always has been. And these books don't change. You know, once they're written, those are like pretty much set in stone.
Uh-huh.
And I can go to these books at any time and read them, and I can see the very best of myself and that it does exist because I was able to put that down onto paper.
Right.
Like, my sense of empathy is 4 years old. Before 4 years ago, I didn't have empathy. I could not empathize with another person.
Hmm.
I could intellectualize a problem you're having that you're explaining to me, and I could look at all of the angles to understand it, but I really couldn't have any kind of I couldn't empathize with you.
Right, right.
Because I just wasn't emotionally there to do it.
Well, I'm glad you didn't give up, and I'm glad that you're here today.
So far, so good.
Okay, good. Okay, so as a writer myself, as a blogger, and the content that I write for
and
the
excellent
show.
Excellent writing for the opening, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Very good.
That means a lot coming from you. So I keep working on parts until I have this moment where I say, that's it. It's done. I had this even conversation with our station manager, Dan Michalko, about like it's an art form in and of itself.
Yeah.
So do you get that moment when you know that this is my masterpiece? Do you get those moments?
Oh, my God, no. Those words have never come out of my mouth. I have a moment where I know deep down in my soul that if I keep messing with it, I'll ruin it.
Okay.
I've just accepted that each of these books is a watermark of where I am as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I am always
getting better.
2 weeks
from
after I finish it, I can go back and read it and be like, wow, that could be better, and that could be better, and that could be better. But so far into it, at least my brain gets focused on like a certain thing. Other things, you know, fall by the way. So that's why I have an editor, and mm-hmm. I go back, and revision mm-hmm. is so important. But there's only so much revising that can be done.
Right.
And I have to let it go. And it's the same thing I've experienced with music. And I think it was Nick Cave talked about the difference of writing literature and writing songs. And he said writing songs is much more difficult because you have to come up with the beginning, the middle, the end, the plot line, the lyrical theme, whatever you're going to do. And he said, and you have to do that like 10 times for an album.
Right.
Start to finish. And he said, with a novel, you're doing it one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an individual effort. And I think he's right. At least my experience is the same way. So writing a song, to me, it takes just as much, I think, creative effort and rocket sauce out of you than, you know, a 30,000 word book. The song may just have like 200 words, so it's not nearly as long. But there's a lot that goes into that, and it takes it out of you.
You just released a new song, Threes.
Twos and Fives and Threes, yep.
Okay, tell us a little bit about that one.
It's super bad marketing for that band, actually. Weed Haven Laughing Academy, when someone asks me what the name is, I say, you'll never remember it.
Right.
And then the song as well, we've managed to do
that. I don't know, Weed Haven seems a little catchy.
Depending on the person.
Right.
If it's my type of person, then they'll remember.
Okay.
So Twos and Fives and Threes is actually the first, I think it's the first real Weed Haven song. It is actually based upon a novel by Robert Cormier called The Chocolate War,
mm-hmm.
Which was a really popular book when I was a kid. But I didn't read, so Weekly Reader never convinced me to read it.
Right.
And I wouldn't have appreciated it anyway. And that novel really deals with the power of conformity in our society in a really, I think, a really brilliant way. And it's a really uncompromising novel. I think it's the second most banned books in public schools in America still. It came out in 1974, so it's a great track record.
Okay.
And wow. I was inspired by that novel and wrote that song. I wrote the lyrics to that song. Based upon that novel. So for me, what I got out of the book was that I had never really thought about the power of and the kind of force of conformity. I think in all of our modern lives, I think the most defining decisions that we make that really define us as people is in the face of conformity.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we have to either compromise ourselves for money or sacrifice something for another person or we stick to our guns and we go ahead, whether it's for selfish reasons or whether they're for very amiable reasons. But we do what we do in the face of conformity. People don't grow. People don't change when things are at a stasis and everything's going great. It's always when they encounter some sort of opposition.
Okay, so in an interview you did for a newspaper, you say, and I quote, "I just never expected it to be as widely accepted as it has been. I'm humbled." And you're talking about your Crime Cat series.
Sure.
Isn't it the writer's motivation to write in order to get published and to have as many folks as possible to read, in essence, a validation of their efforts? What do you think about that?
Probably for most, yes.
Okay.
For me, I self-publish. And when I wrote the first Crime Cats book, it was strictly as a present for my 19 nieces and nephews.
Oh, nice.
As a way to stay in their life. I couldn't be.
Did you say 19?
19.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure.
And I have no kids, so everyone else is making up for my, I guess,
there you go.
My gold bricking. So I have 19 nieces and nephews, and I wrote the first book as a Christmas gift for them. It was a dual reason, one to stay as a way to stay in their life and kind of pass along, I guess, whatever wisdom that I could for growing kids. And then the other thing was to keep me writing. It had a deadline,
yep,
which I totally failed by 3 months to make.
Not too bad.
But I never wanted to write for kids.
Mm.
I just wrote because they were a captive audience, and I'm writing a book for you, and how bad can it be that you would hate it? And so there was no pressure.
Right.
Crime Cats Missing was the very first novel I ever wrote. I didn't think I could actually even write a narrative.
So do you think, and this is just purely your opinion, do you think like Facebooks and blogs and all these things and people writing and posting, do you think it's because they crave to feel like they're actually being published somehow?
I think there's no way of arguing against that it's for attention at a certain level. Facebook algorithms are actually set to throttle how many likes appear and how quickly they appear, so that you keep checking back. You know, they have a business, and their business is to keep you online on that site.
Yes, that's true.
And so there are ways of doing it. And while I think affirmation is important to human beings, and I was actually just talking about this to someone today, I think there's, at least for me, there's a real disconnect, because I have actually been lucky enough to have kind of a measure of fame in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to sound like pretentious or to blow myself
up. It doesn't come across like that.
But that's part of my game. The fact is that when that is attained, I found that I really did not like fame. There is something very valuable to have kind of an amount of anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because I was a raging alcoholic,
mm-hmm,
when I did get that fame, that kind of like local celebrity status,
uh-huh,
people just thought that's the way I was. And I really was playing the drinking was real, but I was really playing this kind of like egomaniacal character on stage, and people just expected me to be that way.
Uh-huh.
And so that soured things for me, as far as that goes. But I think in society, like, everyone wants to be, you know, when you're in school, you want to be popular.
Yep.
You know, life is better for popular kids. And this is a way of indulging that. But I think, unfortunately, it can be certainly taken too far too quickly. And I think the one thing that we don't ask ourselves, especially from a very young age, is why do we want the attention? And I certainly have had problems with my self-worth, and I looked for validation as a human being in the music business, which I can tell you is like the wildest of goose chases. It really just left me very hollow and ultimately suicidal.
Mm.
And so with this, as I kind of hit crisis mode, I had a lot of people that were very close to me that I did share what was going on with me. And the very first thing that they say to kind of bolster my self-worth is, but look at these books that you've written, and look at these awards that you've won, and look at this music that you've created. But none of that really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Achievement does not, you know, it can't replace your soul and your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
It just cannot do it.
So are you still in production in your 200-page graphic novel of Jack the Ripper titled 1888? And can we expect this out?
Oh, the pain. So I just want to say before I get into this that I have the most patient backers that anyone on Kickstarter has ever had. We told people it was going to be a year and a half. It has been over 7 years. I'm not joking. And that thing is still in production.
But you are doing so many other things.
It is not me.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's being held up by the illustrator, John Amore. He's publicly apologized.
John, if you're listening, you've been called out.
He's in the Philippines. Yeah. Hopefully he'll get a link and listen to this. I'm waiting on some artwork from him so that the coloring process and all the rest of it can go. It is actually very near finishing the principal artwork. The one thing I can say is that the story really is great.
Okay.
I'm still, even after 7 years of doing it and having people like wanting the book and having it hanging over my head like a battle axe, I'm still really, really happy with the book. Every time I work on it, I think it's a fantastic piece and I'm really excited about it. As far as like when it will be finished, I honestly don't know.
Okay. Fair enough. What's next for Crime Cats and Weed Haven Academy?
Weed Haven Laughing Academy is going back into the studio. We worked for the first time with Andy Sartain, who's a local music producer. He did Pale Gray Laura's album, Friendly Foes, last couple of albums. He's a really super talented guy. He's like the fifth member of Weed Haven.
Mm.
We did that one song, and then we want to go back into the studio with him to work on a song called Born to Die Here. And then as far as Crime Cats, the plan is that I'm going to start working on the fourth novel.
And put the Feline Force 5
yes,
in there.
Yes, exactly. I have – that one is actually going to start tying all of these books together.
Okay.
And there's going to be an overarching story that goes through the rest of the Crime Cats book. So that's going to be quite an endeavor.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that's really ambitious, but I'm fairly – certain I can do it. I devoted the last couple of years to kind of becoming a Columbus historian.
Yep.
When it comes to hidden history, and I found some really amazing passages of absolutely forgotten history from the city that I'm super excited to share with everybody
through
these stories. But it's going to take me kind of getting my head together. The last couple of years, I did 70 book signings a year.
Wow.
Yeah, and it kind of burned me out.
I know, but I've been to them. They're packed. Kids love you.
Yeah.
And we love you, all of your books.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I really can't say it, and I'm not just like glad-handing it. These books really are a product of this time and place. The amount of support that I've gotten from Columbus has just been absolutely overwhelming.
It's a good city.
Really, really thankful for it. At the same time, doing that number of book signings a year, as well as putting books out at the same time,
yeah,
and trying to, you know, just hustle to you know, keep a roof over
my head.
It's
a lot of work.
Yeah. And this year I'm kind of like taking care of myself and trying to get myself put back together before I jump into the fray again.
Okay. All right. Last question.
Sure, sure.
What in the world is a kitten shower other than a place to go and die of cuteness?
So this is the cat welfare.
Yes.
Kitten shower. Yep.
I want to go to the kitten shower.
So cat welfare is doing a drive for supplies. It's kitten season.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I was just in there the other day with some readers who are coming in as part of the Crime Cats Mystery Club. And so they are in the middle of kitten season. Apparently, what they have to do is they can't keep a lot of kittens in there because mm-hmm. they already have like a whole lot of adult and kind of adolescent cats.
Right.
And so they foster them out. And so they have a lot of people fostering cats. They need kitten formula. They need and kittens are so super high maintenance.
Yes, they are.
And so it's an around the clock thing.
Mm-hmm.
The volunteers that actually foster, as you well know,
mm-hmm.
that's a big responsibility. And so what Cat Welfare is doing is they're having a drive for supplies, and information can be found on their Facebook as well as on their website.
Nice. Well, thank you for sharing us with your words and your writings today, Wolfgang.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you came.
Thank you.
If I were you, I'd write better.
Word from our person on the street.
All right, Chrissy, so what are your thoughts on writing?
Well, I don't do a lot of writing myself, but I certainly like to read. Since I am the owner of Eat Per Love Cat Cafe, there are a lot of our guests who do bring in a lot of books to read, and sometimes they even do bring things to write, and I think and hope that our cats are inspiring them to relax and be creative and have a nice time while they're here and write some pretty good stuff, maybe even about cats.
Right. And you carry the Crime Cat series?
We absolutely do, yes. Being here in Clintonville, it's definitely a community of cat lovers, including Wolfgang Parker, who is the author of the Crime Cat series. So we love to have them here to read and have them here for people to purchase if they'd like to take a copy home.
Now, I know I definitely would want to sit around here and write about cats all day long. Are you ever inspired to write about them, even though you don't write a lot?
I don't write a lot, like I said, but I suppose if I did have to write a book, it would probably be about cats.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, and thank you for caring for the animals.
Sure, thank you.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Rhea Greif, and you've been listening to You Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.